Hey, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's Monday, whatever the hell day it is. What is it, the 11th of March, 2020? Yeah, it's March. Lousy March weather. I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Derek Hunter Program. Appreciate you listening, downloading, sharing, telling a friend, all that good stuff. We'll have some State of the Union reaction and other things. And God, if I just... I had to record the Week in F and Review right after the State of the Union. I was pissed, so... This will be a calmer rendition of that. Maybe. Douchebags. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Appreciate all the support. Now, let's get going because we're going to need... I'm going to need therapy after this. Maybe this will be therapy. We'll find out. Let us get into the President's State of the Union. I say that as, well, the Democrats' State of the Union, the President's State of the Union, however you... choose to look at it, it was not a recognizable version of the United States of America, to me at least. Then again, I'm not suffering from dementia. So, you know, you kind of got to balance things with good old Joe. You let him sniff a couple of pieces of hair, squeeze a couple of young girls' shoulders. But when he goes in for a nibble on the ear, you got to smack him on the head with a rolled-up newspaper like you would, well, his dog that seems to bite everybody. He's not that different. But it was sure speech. The president was late, I assume, because they were waiting for the meds to kick in. It's a difficult balance that they've got to find to give him the right amount of uppers that won't have him, you know, convulsing, going into seizures and falling on the floor. So... Then you've got to wait. When do you give them to him? You've got to make sure they last throughout the entire speech. And they don't peak too soon. So, yeah, he was late. There's no reason. There's no excuse for being late. I really just despise lateness. It's wildly rude. But that's Joe Biden. Your whole life has been you in jobs where you have staff that you don't have to pay for out of your own pocket. So you get a budget from the government and just go, all right, here's some money. They cater to your every need. That's it. I know they're like, oh, these members, every once in a while you hear somebody's staff was tasked with picking up dry cleaning. Yeah. Yeah, that's... staff is tasked with walking dogs. A lot of those entitled 535 people up there on Capitol Hill, they have people doing things you wouldn't possibly imagine. Not gross things, although some of them probably do that too, but they have them doing menial tasks around the house. And they all kind of laugh, by the way, when somebody gets caught. It's never somebody who's like, oh, it's... things are going great. Everybody loves this person. And then, boom, it comes out. No, it's the people that the long knives are already out for. Because pretty much 90% of them will abuse staff in one way or another. Not like physically, mentally, emotionally, sure. But as far as like, hey, would you mind doing this? Or would you mind doing that? And you're like, that's not my job description. For example, they all have places to live in Washington, D.C., and then they go back home. Their home, usually Congress goes out of session, goes on recess, or gavels out of session on a Thursday, and they don't really gavel back in until Monday evening. They really, thankfully, it's still too much, but they really only work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday when they're in town. Well, if you have a house, these people are generally wealthy. They have condos or houses or at least whatever. They have things that are delivered. They have things that get done. Hey, we're going to paint the living room in the Washington, D.C. house. Well, they have to go back to their states, to their districts to meet with constituents. So they'll have a staffer. Hey, on Saturday, the painters are coming over. Here are the keys. Can you be over there and make sure that everything's okay? Like, yeah, sure, whatever. Believe that's highly illegal, although they're not required to do it, quote unquote required to do it. So they all kind of do that sort of thing. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Just a little insight into how Washington, D.C. works, or doesn't, depending on how, your perspective. But when everybody's kissing your butt, you don't really care who's late. And Joe Biden's whole life has been that. Joe Biden's whole adult life, he has had a staff that exists for the express purpose of kissing his ass and doing his bidding, both on a policy basis and on a personal basis. Don't you think that's going to pervert your worldview? Don't you think? And he was there before, you know, Me Too and feminism. So, yeah, definitely took advantage of that. Reputations don't really lie in Washington, D.C. But he went down there, and somebody coached him up. They gave him, I don't know, maybe his pharmacist was Hunter on this one, because he had a lot of fake energy. And he made the mistake that a lot of politicians do. And I'll get into Katie Britt's response, which I thought was terrible. The only thing that could possibly make Joe Biden's speech look good was the Republican response, because of the delivery, not because of the substance. But a lot of politicians look at a speech, look at delivery, and they mistake volume for passion, right? It's very, if you're lazy, you don't really have any belief system, you don't really have any core. And if you look at Joe Biden's life, his entire political career, he has been on every side of every issue. He doesn't get enough credit for being a flip-flopper, but he's more of an opportunist. A flip-flopper is somebody who changes their mind on the country. You flip-flopped on this issue. Joe Biden is, it's different. He never believed it the first time. He doesn't believe it now. He is there for the sake of power. It's what narcissists do. But you would think he'd be better at faking it, right? Bill Clinton, for all his flaws, Lord knows there are a lot of flaws, not just the wake of women in his, or the women in his wake, that lives he's destroyed, the dresses in his wake that he has destroyed, all of that. He could fake it with the best of them. If you were in a room with Bill Clinton, no matter how many people were in that room, if he spent 30 seconds talking to you, you thought there was nobody else in the room. He made you feel as though there was nobody else in the room. It's a skill. It's not an attack on him. It's a skill that very few people have. That's what made him such an effective politician. And when he spoke, he made you believe him. Now, you know he's full of crap, but you sit there and you go, God, that guy's really delivering this speech well. Barack Obama could read a teleprompter pretty well. Watching him give a speech was like watching someone watch tennis, though. It was left teleprompter, right teleprompter, left teleprompter, right teleprompter. When he was off the cuff, he was terrible. And he would contradict himself. He could not speak in any clear, coherent way when he wasn't reading. But that doesn't matter. You watch an interview with Robert De Niro and you think, my God, he's dumb. You know, but he could play a scientist. He could play Brad Pitt. Same, there's a reason you don't see most of these really good actors on long form interviews. They'll come out and they're like, oh, we'll do 5 minutes on Kimmel to promote our movie and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they'll do that. They're mostly there because they stock the, there's a great line in the show Entourage that they stock the green room with models like a trout pond. But most of the people aren't all that bright. They recognize, well, they hire people. They're bright enough to hire people who recognize that they're not that bright. They don't, the people don't tell them. Your publicist doesn't say to Leo, look, you know, you're not going to be able to hold a conversation for more than 5 minutes about anything other than movies. So let's not pretend. And you don't want anybody talking about your insatiable hunger for 25-year-old Eastern European models. So let's not go on this show. They find skillful ways to protect their clients. That's their job. I don't begrudge them that at all. And I appreciate them not pretending to be something they are not. But they're not. Bill Clinton, is a very smart man, and he's a very, empathetic man. Now, whether or not it's fake empathy or whatever, all you really have to do with empathy is convey it. You don't actually, if you feel it, if you genuinely are a wildly empathetic person, you're sort of emotionally unstable, and you're sitting there, and that'll come up in the Katie Britt response. You're just sitting there having emotional breakdowns by proxy, and you're like, why are you doing this? Why can't you handle this? Joe Biden went out there, and he doesn't really care about anything, as evidenced by the fact that he finally said Lincoln Riley like it was his insurance company and not Lake and Riley. He said it twice. Play that for you in a bit. But somewhere along the line, somebody told Joe, since he could not fake the empathy like Bill Clinton could, better than any, no, Reagan could do it too. I don't know. He didn't, but it was a different time. The State of the Union address wasn't a group therapy session like it is now, and it wasn't a campaign rally like it was last night. So it was different then. He didn't have to pull this kind of garbage. He was presidential. Joe Biden was not presidential last night. But like I was trying to say before interrupting myself, Joe Biden was told that passion, belief, concern, care, whatever, it all can be faked with volume. Just yell. Yell. That's, if you can't fake it, yell. If you don't feel it, yell. Yelling is not passion. Right? That's not it for bad actors, it is. If you've ever seen like a high school or college play where you're like, oh, geez, we're supposed to be very passionately in love, and all they're doing is yelling at each other. And like, okay, you can convey passion very quietly. You can. Like a normal human being would. But, okay, whatever. That's how Joe Biden was last night. He spent his time yelling. And then he had two modes. Somebody coached him up on this a long time ago, and it's been his MO ever since. Yell when you're serious, when you've got passion. Just yell. Just volume, volume, volume. And then lean in when you're serious. Lean in and whisper. These are bad stage directions in a high school production of, I don't know, 12 Angry Men or something. But that's what it was last night, is watching this guy oscillate between yelling and forced whispering. And can we just agree that Joe Biden ends a speech horribly? He ends every speech the same way. There is nothing we cannot do if we do it together. Dude, you just spent an hour and a half demonizing half the country. How half the country is nothing but a bunch of fascists and racists and sexists and transphobes and homophobes and blah, 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 blah. And then you're going, well, but we need to unite. Well, first of all, if you, as a member of half the country you were insulting, there's no way in hell I would unite with you. Why would I unite with you? It's like uniting with somebody who shot your dog for no good reason. Why would I unite with you? I don't want anything to do with you. But also, from just a practical standpoint, if I weren't the target of your venom and vitriol, why in the hell would you unite with me? If you believe the crap you said, why would you unite with me? Why would you want me to unite with you? Should you not want nothing to do with... I want nothing to do with you. Should you not want nothing to do with me? Should that not be a reciprocal two-way street right there? Honest to God, the speech... You know, and it's overdone, but the speech last night would have been right at home in Nuremberg in 1933. Right there. The demonization of half the country, the scapegoating of everything. Everything is somebody else's fault. He wasn't even in town that month, even though he's never left town since 1972. And he has been there to make everything better. He's repeated lie after lie. 15 million new jobs. 15 million new jobs? That's sounds impossible. That's a lot of jobs. Well, it only sounds impossible because it is impossible. It's not true. It's not remotely true. The government artificially shut down, to Donald Trump's chagrin, shut down the economy. For, I don't know, how long was 15 days to stop the spread? Like 3, 4, 5, 6 months, whatever it was. A lot of people were laid off. The government incentivized companies not to lay people off, but also allowed people to lay it off. They couldn't stay it open forever. So a lot of people lost their jobs temporarily because they said, well, it's not worth it. We'll just go on unemployment. We'll hire you back when we open back up. And they did. The president of the United States had nothing to do with those jobs. Probably about, 10, 12 million people. So when those jobs came back, they were not new jobs. But the government, the way they count them, and what is it I always say? You control the unit of measure, you control everything. The Biden administration counted them as new jobs. They are new jobs. Look at this. We created a new job. Wow. That's a hell of a feat, Mr. President. You created a new company, whole cloth, out of manufacturing that has got all the same people who used to work there working in a factory that's already been tooled to manufacture. That's an amazing feat. They can go right back in there and on day one start doing manufacturing without any sort of ramp up, built, nothing. And of course, it's garbage. It's garbage. People were invited to come back. It's like, we need to get the house fumigated. Everybody out. You got to stay out for 2 days. They're going to put a tent over it. They're going to come in and spray it. Mr. White and Jesse Pinkman are going to come in and make some meth in the living room. And then they're going to all get out. And we go, oh, we've got a brand new house. You don't have a brand new house. You have a house where you got rid of the fleas or whatever the hell it is you need to make tent your house and bomb it for. But you would go around going, oh, we're having a housewarming party. Why are you having a housewarming party? You didn't move. Yeah, no, I know, but it's a new house. We moved out for a couple of days. We shut it down. We laid ourselves off. And now we're back. Now, wouldn't you look at somebody who is making that claim as a little bit weird? Only because they are. Only because you know they're lying. It's the same damn thing with the president of the United States. Have there been jobs created? Of course there have. 15 million? Nowhere near. I realize that I'm the skunk at the garden party here, but for the love of God, a little bit of fact-checking by the media would be nice, but they don't. We cut the deficit by $1 trillion. You added five. Okay? To the debt. The debt and the deficit are different. You can only say the things that Joe Biden said last night or in his speech if you know you're not going to be fact, if you know you can get away with it. There are certain lies. People shade the truth. People do all sorts of things like that and hope they get away with it. You can only go for the really, really big ones if you have supreme confidence that nobody's going to call you out on it, that nobody's going to call you out on it. Then you know nobody's going to call you out on it. If you're a Democrat, you know nobody's going to call you out on it. Brian Riedel, a friend of mine, we worked together at the Heritage Foundation. He's now senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He goes through the budget and knows the budget better than most people, including most people who vote on it. Poor bastard. But he does. He lives for this sort of stuff. And he tweeted out last night, listening to President Biden somehow assert that he cut the budget deficit is... He added $4.8 trillion over the decade in new legislation. So far, the deficit doubled to $2 trillion last year, the highest percentage of GDP ever outside of a recession and war. He did it. That's great. It's like giving yourself credit. I've cut down by a third the number of times this month I beat my wife. Okay, well, why the hell are you beating your wife? Maybe you shouldn't beat your wife. You know, hey, we are running up a major deficit. We've been running up our credit cards. But this week we did. I'm mostly going to strip clubs and running up my credit card. But this week I was a little sick and I didn't go to the strip club to run up the credit card. Yay, me. I've saved us a bunch of money. Like, no, you didn't save us a bunch of money. Didn't do anything. Because next week you're going back to the strip club. The rest of his speech was we need to spend money on this. We need to spend money on that. We need to spend money on the other thing. Okay. So you cut the deficit, so you say, even though you didn't. That's a lie. But you quote-unquote cut the deficit, acknowledging there's still a $2 trillion deficit, not to mention the national debt, which is different. So you're proposing another $1 trillion in spending? Doesn't that seem self-defeating? Doesn't that seem counterproductive at a minimum? We're going broke, but don't worry. I've saved us from going broke. I've started saving us money. Oh, that's great. Now let's talk about how to spend that money we've saved. Well, wait a second. We're still going broke. No. Don't overthink it. Yeah, no, overthink it. Don't overthink it. Just think it. It's right there. It's obvious. Let us get into some of what actually the president said. And we got to start off with the Lincoln-Riley bit. A little longer. I want to give it context. Nobody out there, no liberals, say, well, did he correct it? What's the full context? No, he didn't. Marjorie Taylor Greene, I'm no big fan of Marjorie Taylor Greene, was wearing a big red MAGA hat. And it was kind of funny because MSNBC was outraged that she was wearing a rag. You're not allowed to wear those hats in the House of Representatives. Meanwhile, half the squad is wearing an Arafat terrorist headscarf. And like, oh, it's traditional Palestinian. Oh, so it's the tradition. You're saying traditional Palestinian is terroristic. Let's just be honest. Okay, that's fine. And then the rest of the gang is all wearing white. They've been wearing white for, I don't know, probably the last 5 or 6 State of the Union addresses. Why? Because, well, they pretend that we're in solidarity with the suffragettes because nobody has it as bad as women do. Oh, poor women. But I just want to say this to my Democrat friends out there. White is not necessarily a good look, right? It's just not necessarily a good look. Black is slimming. White, not so much. Just throwing it out there, and you do with that what you will. But also, you know, fake martyrdom is not particularly attractive. It doesn't look, not a good look. That's what they are. Anyway, Marjorie Taylor Greene told Joe Biden before the speech, challenged him to say Lincoln Riley's name. So right then and there, he'd heard the name Lincoln Riley. Now, that is undoubtedly not the first time that Joe Biden had heard the name Lincoln Riley. He'd spent 4 or 5 days at Camp David prepping for this speech. They probably debated whether or not they should directly acknowledge Lincoln Riley in the speech or continue to ignore her, you know, and pretend that they don't have blood on their hands. Whatever the case, they found the middle ground. They knew that somebody would say something or that there would be some kind of thing. The whole thing has become a political event. It's like a night of the DNC, the speech was, and you just sit there and it doesn't matter who the president is. You yearn for the days, even though they didn't exist in our lifetime, you yearn for the days when the State of the Union address was delivered by mail. Can't we just go back to that? The Speaker of the House is under no obligation to invite the president to deliver the State of the Union address. And I don't think there's any reason. You got Democrats chanting 4 more years like it's their convention in Chicago. You've jumped the shark. All right, it's time to give it a rest. You can't wait until the adults come back in charge before you do this again. But anyway, Joe had plenty of time and lots of staff to prepare him for a Lincoln Riley confrontation. And he mispronounced her name twice. As of this morning, now this could easily change. The New York Times, I looked up the transcript of the president's speech in the New York Times, and sure enough, they had Lincoln Riley. Now, they only had it once. You'll hear it twice. But they had Lincoln Riley in the transcript. So they're at least acknowledging that he is wildly wrong, that he didn't care enough. I expect that to change sooner rather than later. I imagine the White House is going to be making calls this weekend to various news outlets. They're all not really covering it because the New York Times then wrote up a story, quote unquote, a news story about the exchange with Marjorie Taylor Greene. And that story did not include any reference whatsoever to Joe Biden calling her Lincoln Riley. The headline of that piece by a guy called Chris Cameron. I don't know how he sleeps. What a hack. The headline is Biden spars with Marjorie Taylor Greene about a murder he said was committed by an illegal. And that's what you'll hear. Joe Biden will say that in cheapening Lincoln Riley's murder. Saying, well, lots of people she was killed by an illegal. There were a bunch of members of the Democratic caucus, Democratic members of Congress, who were tweeting about how they were offended that Joe Biden used the term an illegal to describe an illegal alien. These people have not expressed any remorse, concern, disgust, whatever, about the murderer of Lake and Riley because they don't give a crap. But when somebody says an illegal, then suddenly pearls are clutched and outrage ensues because Democrats have their priority and none of them are you. None of them are Americans ever whatsoever under any circumstances. It's just, you can't make this stuff. Well, you could make this stuff up, but if you wrote it as fiction, your publisher would go, we can't do this. It's too ridiculous. You need to tone this down. You need to make this more believable. And yet, that's where we are as a society. Anyway, let us get to the audio itself. Here is the President of the United States. Now, it's in bad form that Marjorie Taylor Greene starts yelling from the audience, but what do you expect? This has become a concert. It's become the social event of the season. It's not. There's no respect for any office anymore. You should have respect for the office of the presidency, and the president should have respect for the institution of Congress. Neither exists anymore, so you end up with this.
Not really. Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself. I understand. But look, if we change the dynamic at the border, people pay these smugglers $8,000 to get across the border because they know if they get by, if they get by and let into the country, it's 6 to 8 years before they have a hearing. And it's worth taking the chance of the $8,000. But, if it's only 6 weeks, the idea is it's highly unlikely that people will pay that money and come all that way, knowing that they'll be able to be kicked out quickly.
Yeah, part of the problem with what Biden said about immigration in general is he assumes that people will actually show up for that court date, whether it's 6 years, 6 months, or 6 hours from here. The goal is to get into the country. And Democrats enable them in that goal by letting them into the country. It doesn't matter how far away. Oh, no, they're going to kick me out. Nobody's going, well, at least I'll have 6 good years. They're going, Democrats are working tirelessly to make sure that I get amnesty and citizenship, no matter what. So 6 years, 600 years, it doesn't matter. I'm going to go in here and start having kids. They're going to make sure I never get out of here because they'll be anchor babies of birthright citizenship, which is a scam, thanks to Ted Kennedy. There isn't anything that Kennedy hadn't screwed up in this country. And then they go, I don't care. You can have the court hearing, quote unquote, 6 feet inside the border. Once I'm in, I'm past you. I'm gone. I don't care. They're not coming here hoping to really get entangled in our court system. And boy, howdy, they really, really desperately want to have a fair hearing. They know their asylum claims are garbage. They are coached by left-wing organizations, up to and including the Catholic Church, as to how to get past Border Patrol. The objective of these illegals is not to get asylum. It's to get past the Border Patrol. Once you get past the Border Patrol, it's game on. It doesn't matter how many times or how long or how many court dates you miss or whatever. It's over. You're in. We need to deport them. We need to prevent them from coming in the first place. All those sorts of things, you know, like securing the southern border, which Joe Biden has no interest in. He has as much interest in securing the southern border as he does in accurately saying the name Lincoln Riley. You heard him there. Lincoln Riley. Now, what's ironic about that, if you didn't watch the speech, if you were one of the hundreds of millions of Americans who didn't watch the speech, Marjorie Taylor Greene gave him a button. It says, Lincoln Riley, say her name, or something to that effect. But the Lincoln Riley part was large. It was the big part of the button. Joe was holding that up at the time he said Lincoln twice. Lincoln. I mean, he clearly articulated Lincoln. He had it. He was rehearsed. He knew what he was supposed to say. And by the way, that was the best they could come up with. Is Lincoln Riley was killed by an illegal. How many people are killed? There's a lot of people killed by legals. Oh, okay. So I don't have to give a crap about anybody killed. It depends on who kills them. That's right. Yeah, and that's really how the Democratic mind works, if you really think about it. St. George Floyd, a junkie who overdosed and died from fentanyl, is a hero, a saint, really. And he must be remembered. Nobody could have a funeral. You weren't allowed to visit dying relatives. You weren't allowed in a hospital to visit a dying loved one. But George Floyd somehow managed to have three memorial services for one junkie. It's probably more times than he saw his kid in the last 5 years of his life. He had three memorial services. The kid lived like 1,500 miles away. He's one loving father. Loving father. Yeah, I'm sure. He loved his daughter. Not as much as he loved crack, but he loved his daughter. But these people, you listen to them. And they go, well, George Floyd is Black Lives Matter. What about all those lives in Chicago? Hundreds every year. Oh, well, I mean, not them. Shut up. Stop talking about it. You're only talking about them because you don't want to talk about George Floyd. No, we can talk about George Floyd, too, if you want to talk about George Floyd. I suggest you do it honestly. But we can talk about George Floyd, too. But which death is more tragic? Somebody who'd spent their life as a criminal and a drug addict who overdosed on fentanyl, couldn't breathe because he was overdosing on fentanyl, but you know, you've got a scalp and a police officer there. Congratulations. Or a 2-year-old just mind their own business playing, shot by a stray bullet because gang members have no respect for life or whatever, and they just shot randomly, wildly, and missed and killed a 2-year-old on their porch. It happened in Baltimore a few years ago, Mackenzie Elliott. You haven't probably heard the name, because why would you hear the name? She wasn't killed by a cop. She wasn't killed by anybody who it would be useful for Democrats to exploit. So she doesn't matter. So when Joe sits there and says, oh, Lincoln Riley, she was killed by an illegal, but there are people, lots more people killed by legals. He's basically saying, why should I care about her? Why should anybody care about her? More, okay. Do you care about anybody who isn't politically useful? Do you care about anybody who is not, it was decidedly not politically useful, it's technically politically harmful? Do you care at all? But no, the answer is no. They look at everybody as an opportunity, and whether or not they can use them to advance their, if they can, they will. If they can't, they won't. That's why that next, the non-binary girl who, you notice that story went away, the non-binary girl was beat up in school. and then died the next day. We still don't have the toxicology report, as far as I know, but the authorities have all said she didn't die from any of the injuries she suffered in the fight in the bathroom. But until we had that and it became possible that it was something else, it was the story du jour. There were vigils. All the vigils. Where are the vigils? MSNBC was having shirts made up, and now she's not useful to them. And so it doesn't happen. It doesn't matter. Why bother? And you go, huh, that seems weird. They care desperately about this girl. She's a member of the Alphabet Mafia, right? The LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ gang. Like, oh, no, we're all there. They're all this. They're all that. They're the other thing. Oh, wait, the circumstances have changed. Facts are contradictory. Now it's not useful to us. Not interested. All right, moving on. Where's the next one? Can you imagine you lost a loved one to violence, or somebody who shouldn't be in this country? Somebody who, that guy speaking, that pile of hair plugs speaking, his policies enabled to be in this country, and all the run-ins with law enforcement, all the opportunities to get rid of him, that guy's policies again stood in the way. It's weird. He doesn't want a border barrier, but damn it, he's got barriers between the illegal aliens and the prison system and deportation and all that. No. We don't want to come on in, but you can't touch him. It's weird. Very peculiar about that. And you go, yeah, sorry that your loved one got killed. That's a drag. That's a bit of a drag. I lost kids, too. Yeah, you lost kids to a car accident and to brain cancer. Okay, how many times are you going to milk that cow, Joe? Because saying you lost a kid 50 years ago, well, sad for you, is not the same as your policies directly led to the murder of this 22-year-old girl. You see? And you go, but then lots of people are killed every day. Why should this one? Why is this one special? Why do you care about this one? Well, this one was absolutely preventable. This one is the reason you have blood all over your hands, Joe. I know you don't want to look down at your hands. I know you don't care. But other people might. Other people might, because there are other people who, the 2-year-old here in Maryland, murdered by an illegal. The 14-year-old in Virginia, raped by an illegal. There are other crimes out there. Now, what is Joe telling us there? That this devout Catholic man, this deeply religious man, this empathetic man who lies about the death of his son Beau to every chance he gets, telling everybody that he died in Iraq, which he did not. He hadn't been in Iraq for about 5 years when he died. They're saying, oh, he's so empathetic. He's so sympathetic. Is it empathetic? Is it compassionate to cheapen death by trying to exploit it for your political advantage? Is it compassionate to look at the murder of an innocent girl who was just out for a run and go, yeah, but still, more people are killed other ways? Okay, now if you just want to be a numbers game, we can play the numbers game. You want to ban assault weapons? Quote-unquote assault weapons are responsible for fewer murders than knives are every year in the country, than baseball bats are in every year in this country. If you really want to go and be governed by the numbers, Joe, but you don't. Because you'd have to actually care about the end result rather than look at tragedy and see it as a delivery device, a way for you to sneak what you want past the goalie. That's really what it is. Agenda uber alles, said in its original German, on purpose. By the way, the member of there were a couple of tweets. I highlight one. Congressman Chuy Garcia represents Illinois' 4th Congressional District. He's a member of the Progressive Caucus. Of course, he is. He tweeted out last night, "As a proud immigrant, I'm extremely disappointed to hear the president use the word illegal." Yeah. Can't find his tweet about his disappointment in an illegal alien murdering an American. I can't find that tweet. But he is very upset at the President of the United States used the term illegal because they'd much rather police your speech than our borders, right? That's, you can tell a lot about these people by their priorities. And their priorities are not you. Their priorities are not you. The Democratic Progressive Caucus, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, the Squad, they were all wearing the Palestinian scarves. Oh, they care so deeply. They care so deeply about the Palestinians. None of them were calling for the release of hostages. It's kind of funny because Rashida Tlaib has caught a lot of hell for not really coming out forcefully in favor of releasing the hostages. So she has taken to mentioning the hostages in her impassioned, people are dying. Yeah, well, it's amazing how when a terrorist wraps himself and children with, you know, ACE bandages and duct tape and then starts shooting at people, killing innocent civilians, and then somebody shoots back and, you hit a child, you monster. Like, ah, maybe you if you care about the children, you shouldn't lecture the person shooting back at the person trying to kill them who has wrapped themselves in children, who accidentally hits a child. You should probably be pissed off at the person who wrapped himself in child, right? If you wrap yourself in Velcro and then you're Velcroing kids to your chest, and that just seems like common sense.
Well, Israeli defense forces have put children's lives at risk.
Yeah, by shooting at terrorists. Right? Let's just be honest about it. They can't be honest about it because she doesn't really care about the concept. She cares about her friends getting killed. She has her priority. Her priority is based on identity politics. Her identity is, I'm a Palestinian American. She puts it right there in every one of her bios. I'm the first Palestinian American to be elected to Congress. So what? I don't care what somebody's ethnic heritage is. If they're a pile of garbage, I don't care whether it's full of cabbage and corned beef or anything else. I don't care where you're from. I care where you're coming from mentally, and you're coming from a place of terrorist sympathy. A huge swath of the left is. Amnesty International yesterday, during Biden's speech, when he did not fully condemn Israel. They tweeted out, ceasefire now, all in caps with an exclamation point, because you know they're serious. Can't find their release all hostages now tweet. There's still over 130 people, including a dozen Americans, who are being held hostage by Hamas. There's no call. You watch Rashida Tlaib, is what I was saying there. You watch Rashida Tlaib mention it. She begrudgingly goes, well, we should release the hostages, and both sides have blame. She tries to equivocate. It's like watching a kid being forced to apologize. Yeah, like, gee, I'm sorry. And they're looking down. They're kicking dirt. Like, oh, geez, I'm sorry I did that. I remember our next-door neighbors, Ray and Erlene. You, as a boy, for you ladies out there, I'll give you a peek into what it's like to grow up a boy. At a certain point, I don't know, it was maybe 5 or 6, you start learning about things from other boys. Nothing dirty. That's later in life, and you learn that from magazines. Or now you learn it from the internet at age 2. Or your kindergarten teacher as they explain their key party and orgy they went to over the weekend with their life partners in their thruple. Because that's what they do now, these leftists. But you learn to, pee outside. It's a big deal. Like, oh my, well, I can do this wherever. I felt bad because I had caught me and kid who lived on the corner, Scott. We got caught peeing in Erlene's strawberry patch. It was a big strawberry patch. She had a little patch on the side of the house with strawberries in there. And we'd just pee. Anyway, we got to pee. Like, let's pee. This is great. Let's pee. And there, Scott's house was on the corner, and then it was Ray and Erlene's house, then it was our house. And she caught us, and she told our moms, and I had to go over there and apologize. And I mean, it's gross. It's gross. But I didn't think about the gross at the time. And I was forced to apologize, but I didn't mean it. It was like, sorry I did that. That's what Rashida Tlaib is like. That's what all these leftists are like when they're talking about the terrorist and the hostages. Like, yeah, then we need to stop killing innocent Palestinians. They did nothing to nobody except for elect Hamas. They never did nothing to nobody. And they should probably also release the hostages. Yeah, fine, okay. But, I mean, come on. They're bombing hospitals. Where's a hospital that was bombed? Well, I can't point to one exactly, but they're bombing hospitals. It's amazing. If Hamas wanted to be an economic powerhouse, they could stop with the genocidal attempts of murdering all Jews. And they should go right into the disaster recovery business. Because within seconds of any explosive going off, including, you know, a suicide vest prematurely exploding or one of their errant rockets landing in the hospital parking lot and exploding a couple of empty cars, they are able to calculate death totals within about 12 and a half seconds. It's an amazing skill. Most people, you know, like Rain Man, you drop some toothpicks on the floor and you can count them immediately. That's the kind of skill that these people have. Like, wow, that's amazing. 473 civilians in a building that looks like you could maybe put 50 people into? And only the parking lot was bombed? That somehow killed that many people? Holy cow. That would be useful to, like, an earthquake in the third world somewhere. You send in somebody from Hamas and they go, yeah, there's exactly 12,782 people buried under the rubble right in there. You know right away, and they could probably even divine where to tell you to dig, too. It's a skill, but they just can't stop killing Jews. It's a shame, really. They're denying the world what is clearly an inherent skill that is unique to them. Of course, the media dutifully reports it. Maybe that has something to do with it. 6 weeks later, they correct it. But that's beside the point. Why bother? Anyway, back to the speech here. Joe Biden, when it used to be that State of the Union addresses were wish lists. Here's what I want. Here's what I want. I'm going to be sending a bill that does this. I'm going to be sending a bill that does that. Most of the time, by the way, they don't actually send the bill up there. But they, I wanted this. I wanted that. I want the other thing. Joe Biden's speech was mostly a, my God, Republicans suck. Democrats are the best. Republicans suck. We saved everything. We fixed everything. You're mistaken when you go to the grocery store and think you can't afford stuff. The guy, by the way, mentioned Snickers shrinking, which I don't know that Snickers have shrunk, but he mentioned Snickers in the speech before he mentioned the border. Let you know his priorities just right there. But one of the things he mentioned is he wants to give teachers a raise, wants to give public school teachers a raise, which I'd be in favor of if it came with accountability. I'd be happy to double the salary of teachers if we could fire teachers who can't do the job, who aren't good at the job. But you can't do that. Say, once they get that union protection, I've told the story before about the French teacher in my high school who and her husband one summer got busted for smuggling cocaine back from Colombia, as most French teachers do. And she was gone for my junior year. She was out. She was gone. She was, I don't know if she was in jail or if she was in plotting with lawyers and prepping for law or court case or whatever. But at a certain point, a year later, her husband turned state's evidence. In exchange for charges against her being dropped, this is all the story at the time, charges against her being dropped and charges against him being greatly reduced. And guess who was back teaching French the next year? Union, yes. Unbelievable. It's true, though. It's genuine. New York City has the famous rubber room where teachers who can't be trusted to be around children have to report every day during the school day. It's not me making it up. Look it up. New York Post has reported extensively on this. I don't know if they've reported on it in the last 5 years or whatever, but there's a place in New York City where teachers who have been a little too friendly with usually female students, the ones who are friendly with male students, they, I don't know, get a parade or something. But they go and they have to show up when school starts and they have to stay there. They can do whatever they want. They just have to be there because they're protected. They've been there long enough. They have tenure. It would cost more to fire them because of the lawsuits that the union would bring, even though they cannot be trusted to be around children. So they just pay them. They pay them their annual salary. They get raises, just like teachers who are good, just like teachers who are bad, the teachers who are perverts who can't be around children. They get the raises too. And they get the pension. They have to sit there. I mean, I got 10 years left and you got to sit there for 10 years. Every day. It's like a prison sentence, except you get to go home. You get a salary. You get vacation time. You get everything. And you go, that seems absurd. Well, it only seems absurd because it is absurd. And it's only allowed to exist because the Democratic Party is owned, at least in part, by the teachers' unions, one of their biggest funders, them and trial lawyers. You wonder why you get these ridiculous settlements. You go, that's absurd. Why would the person beat themselves in the head with a hammer and they're suing the hammer company? It's because trial lawyers give a lot of money to Democrats. They will not countenance tort reform. They will not countenance any concept of accountability for teachers. Tenure reform is off the table. So last night, Joe Biden called for a raise. Let's give teachers a raise. And Democrats cheered. Oh, yeah, let's give them a raise. I'm all for giving them a raise if they're good at their job, if they're effectively able to convey information to children, not information about how many pronouns somebody can come up with or what, but useful information like being able to do math or read, crazy things like that. But that's not allowed. Democrats will never allow that. I actually came up with an idea once to, instead of enterprise zones, to have enterprise careers where you can be a teacher tax-free in exchange for you voluntarily giving up tenure, right? You can get merit-based raises and no federal income taxes or a significantly reduced rate for a period of time, but you had to give up tenure. You had to be accountable. That would cause a whole bunch of people to go into the teaching profession, give it a shot, like, boom, I get a 20% pay raise right off the bat. Let's do that. And then you get rid of the bad ones. You get a whole bunch of people who otherwise probably wouldn't try teaching might discover that they're pretty good at it. They might discover that they like it. And those are the people you want, not the bitter, angry, and we've all had those teachers, bitter, angry clock watchers who just go, 20 more minutes. Keep reading. Put your heads down. If you're done, don't talk to me. Don't bother me with anything. Those people you learn nothing from. Well, it's not entirely true. You learn what not to be as an adult. But anyway, listen to Joe, because he also called for tutoring and summer school to make sure that third graders are able to read. To which I would ask, what in the hell is the point of a teacher then? If you need to hire somebody else to come in and teach the kid how to read, what are you teaching kids up to third grade? My kid's in first grade. She can read better than I can. That's Quinn. Bailey is getting there. Bailey's only in kindergarten. But Quinn is sitting down reading Junie B. Jones books and Nancy Drew mysteries and things. Like, I couldn't do that. Not just because the subject matter is repugnant, not repugnant, but boring to me. You get the idea. But anyway, listen to the President of the United States say he wants to spend a whole bunch of money to make sure that every child can read by the third grade, which is kind of what I thought the point of the education system was in the first place.
I want to expand high-quality tutoring and summer learning to see that every child learns to read by third grade.
Why? What are teachers doing? I want to spend this more money to do. Okay, then you're telling me that teachers suck. A lot of teachers suck. They happen to be concentrated where? They happen to be concentrated in Democrat-controlled cities and cities that Democrats have controlled for generations, not just currently controlled by Democrats, but years. It takes years of rot to replace teachers who are good with teachers who are making sure that nobody misgenders or dead names anybody. You can tell a lot about people's priorities by what they prioritize. See? It's kind of weird that way. Democrats' priorities are not making sure children can read. Oh, they'll weaponize it. They'll do it. But what? I want to make sure I want to get teachers. I want to get tutors, high-quality tutors, that are going to be unionized into the teachers' union, right? Which more dues-paying members to the teachers' unions, forced dues-paying members to the teachers' unions, means that the teachers' unions have more money in their coffers, which means that they can give more and spend more to Democrats. The circle of life on the left. Use taxpayer money to pay their supporters, and they get a piece broken off of it. They're the mafia without the good food, without the fine decor choices. It's unbelievable. And yet the left cheers this. The left cheers this. The left views this as it's a good thing. No thought of, well, why do we... Third grade seems a little bit late, but then you look and you go, well, there are lots of schools, more than a dozen schools in the city of Baltimore, for example, where not a single student is proficient at math. Not a single one. Schools in Chicago where not a single student can read at grade level. Can read at grade level. And you go, what we really need to do is bring in more people and spend more money. Like, wait a second, we're spending more in these cities than just about anywhere else, with possible exception of Washington, D.C., which also sucks. Maybe the problem isn't money. Maybe the problem is the teachers. Maybe the problem is the curriculum. Maybe it is the priorities of the teachers. If your priority is to make sure that you're talking about the rainbow flag and that everybody in the world is super tolerant of whatever it is your pet project at the moment may be, then your priority is not teaching a kid how to read, teaching a kid how to do math, teaching a kid anything. You have a different priority. It's fine, you can have a different priority, but you shouldn't have it in the classroom. And if you can't control yourself, you should be out on your ass. Let's just be honest about it. The human potato, Brian Stelter, the former CNN employee who is now desperately bucking for a job at MSNBC. And since liberals always land on their feet and take care of each other, he is a special correspondent for Vanity Fair now and a fellow at the Kennedy School of Government, I believe, up at Harvard. He tweeted out that clip. I got that audio from him. He tweeted out saying, if you told me that Biden called for expanding tutoring this summer for summer learning so that every child learns to read by the third grade and the House Speaker didn't, and didn't is all in caps, didn't applaud or stand up, I wouldn't believe it. So here's the video to prove it. Huh. And he also immediately followed that up with, also, the speaker stayed seated while Biden said, I want to give public school teachers a raise. Well, Brian, Mr. Weeble, and I call you Mr. Weeble, if in, or unless you prefer the more formal Uncle Fester, if the public school teachers were doing their job, the tutors would not be necessary, right? Am I correct me if I'm wrong here, but if the teachers were doing their job, the tutors would not be necessary. And since apparently the tutors are necessary, the teachers aren't doing their job. See how conversely that works. And if the teachers aren't doing their job, why in the hell would you give them a raise? Why the hell would you be calling for a blanket raise? Good teachers should get a raise. You should be afraid of losing good teachers, and you should do whatever you can to make sure you don't lose good teachers. But you're not allowed to differentiate good teachers from the ones who spend a year out of the classroom fighting drug trafficking charges, or the ones who have to go to the rubber room because they get a little handsy when they're around teenage girls. Yeah. But Democrats care about children. Joe Biden then went on, since we're talking about education, he went on to talk about trans rights and book bans. He threw it all kind of in together. Book, just a reminder. Nobody's talking about banning books. Books are not banned. As evidenced by, just like during the Trump administration, what did these leftists do? Nonstop, they're like, ah, oh, Donald Trump is a dictator. He's a totalitarian. He's a monster. He's a fascist. And like, you're making this statement from a podium at a press conference on national cable news without fear of retribution. If one-tenth of what you were saying was true, this would be a written statement released from exile on an island heavily guarded because you were afraid that somebody was going to secretly come in and kill you, right? But, of course, you can't take these people literally. You have to take them seriously because they will impose their will on everyone. It's really kind of funny. That guy's a fascist, so we must prevent him from being on the ballot. That guy's a totalitarian, so we must do everything we can to put him in jail. What did he do? Well, he would do bad stuff if he were in power. He would try to punish his political opponents if he were in power. So we, as his political opponents, must put him in jail. And you go, wait a second, I see a little flaw in your theory, a little contradiction there in what you're saying. Don't think too hard about it. In fact, that should be the left's mantra, not about the about it part, but the don't think too hard. Actually, too hard, forget. Don't think. We've got the thinking for you. So when they're talking about book bans, go on Amazon. You'll find Genderqueer. You can have a copy of Genderqueer at your house this afternoon or tomorrow. I promise you. Wherever you are in the country, you can have a copy of Genderqueer or any of these other books. If you really want to read about, adults having sex with kids and how-to guides to perform homosexual acts on each other, you can have that book maybe by lunch tomorrow. But does it belong in a public school library? See, now, if you want to order that book, go ahead, knock yourself out. I don't want your kids playing with my kids. I don't want you anywhere near my kids. But that's how you want to roll, as long as you're not doing anything to your kids. Fine, that's it. I would look at that as abuse, but you can pervert your kids' minds with all your weird political philosophies and make sure that they know every possible gender is made up and blah, 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 and they deny biology. If that's what you want for your kid, you try that crap on my kid, it's going to be a problem. I'd feel a hate crime coming on. You go into bookstores and they have banned book section, which again kind of negates the, wait, if it's a banned book, how can you have it? You don't need a secret handshake. You don't need to know a secret knock. You don't have to know which book to pull over there, or like the old Batman show, you flip the head of Bach or whatever it was and flip the switch and there's the poles to the banned book cave. Nope, they're right there on an end cap. It says, hey man, here's the banned books. That might lead you to think, a thinking person, to realize that those books aren't actually banned. There's a difference. Because technically, try to find a Bible in a public school library. Go ahead, try and find a Bible in a public school library. A kid breaks out a Bible at lunch in a public school, and the teachers will throw themselves on it like it's a grenade. They throw some other kids on an actual grenade, but they'll throw themselves on the Bible. You can't have that in here. You can't have it. You're silently praying to yourself, and the SWAT team breaks in. You can't do that in here. Get your religion out of this school, churchy. Now let's get back to Jenny Has Two Mommies. All right, let's get right back to that. Here's what we can do. And you're just sitting there. And they're all graphic novels, by the way, because kids can't read, right? We've already established that. We need summer courses and specialized tutors to bring them in so they can learn how to read. So since they know that they can't read, let's draw pictures of these sex acts, which makes it all the more disgusting. But by the way, I would point out that every school board that has been like, how dare anybody try to ban books? How dare ban books? Every single time, without fail, you can find video after video of this all over the internet. Every single time a parent comes in and starts, or even some members of legislative bodies come in and start to read the books that the parents are saying have no business being in elementary school libraries, some member of the school board starts gaddling down, going, there are children watching this live. First of all, there's no children in the world watching local C-SPAN coverage of the school board or the city council. They just aren't, unless they're being punished. Secondly, if you can't read it in a public hearing, if you're saying, this is too crap, what are you doing? There are children watching. That's exactly the point. They never connect those last two dots. But that's exactly the point. That's exactly the problem. And they don't see it. But the President of the United States last night decided he wanted to perpetuate this lie because for Democrats, as is so often the case, the truth doesn't help them. So they have to lie. Listen to the President last night.
Stop denying another core value of America. Our diversity across American life. Banning books, it's wrong. Instead of erasing history, let's make history. I want to protect fundamental rights. Pass the Equality Act. And my message to transgender Americans, I have your back. Pass the PRO Act for workers' rights.
Yeah, let's force unionization. Let's force and allow and enable child sterilization. Banning books is wrong. Who's banning books? Who's doing any? This is your priority? This is your priority. It actually is his priority. It's the Democratic Party's priority. It can't talk about the economy. They can't talk about wages, which real wages relative to inflation are down for the first time ever. They can't talk about food prices. Did you know that food prices between 2010 and 2021 went up a total for that 11-year period, went up less than they've gone up since 2021 till now? 18% in that 11-year period versus 21% under the Biden administration. Can't talk about that. Oh, you can say you're getting screwed out of potato chips and Snickers. And you're like, what? This is the President of the United States. This is the argument the President of the United States is making? I guess if you think about it, it makes sense that he then goes on to whine about the cost of insulin. He wants everybody to become a type 2 diabetic. But is that going to improve people's lives? Did you hear anything in the State of the Union address that you think, well, this would really improve the state of the country and people's lives in anything? I didn't. But there was one little bit that a lot of people were confused by. Talking about vaccines. Now, it's widely known that vaccines didn't work. Okay, the vaccine, quote, the shot, may well have worked. It may well have worked against the first iteration of the virus. But by the time the vaccines came out, it may have helped. It'd been an immunity booster. But by the time the vaccines had come out, the virus had mutated. So something designed to combat or to trigger the body's immune system to be able to defeat a virus, it was out of date. The virus didn't exist. There were similarities. It may have helped boost immunity a little bit. But the virus then kept mutating and kept mutating. And thank God it mutated in the direction that it did, that it I had a friend, my friend Todd, had COVID last week. Tested positive. Said, you got anything? Now he's got the sniffles a little bit. The CDC changed the guidelines. If you test positive for COVID, you don't even have to isolate anymore. If you're going to go around licking doorknobs and making out with people, you should probably wear a mask for a couple of days, but you don't even have to do anything anymore. It's an inconvenience. Now, you can decide whether or not, in your experiences, it was always just an inconvenience and they were wrong or lying about the impacts to begin with, or that the virus has mutated to the point that it's like the common cold. That's up to each individual and how it impacts them. There's still people who can die from the common cold. So, you know, it's up to you. But there's no real question that the vaccines didn't really do a damn thing. And yet we're still seeing Travis Kelce out there with his little Band-Aid. I'm going, yeah, no, I'm stuck on Band-Aid because I'm on my 15th booster shot. I don't know if you need that many booster shots. Maybe it's not working. But the president then said, as there are a lot of people in the country not particular fans of vaccine mandates and things, that the vaccine is now going on to fight cancer. I had a lot of people scratching their heads, going, what? Myself included. Here he is making that very claim.
4 years ago next week, before I came to office, the country was hit by the worst pandemic and the worst economic crisis in a century. Remember the fear, record losses? Remember the spikes in crime and the murder rate, raging virus that took more than 1 million American lives of loved ones, millions left behind? A mental health crisis of isolation and loneliness. A president, my predecessor, failed the most basic presidential duty that he owes to American people, the duty to care. I think that's unforgivable. I came to office determined to get us through one of the toughest periods in the nation's history. We have. It doesn't make news, but news in 1,000 cities and towns, the American people are writing the greatest comeback story never told. So let's tell the story here. Tell it here and now. America's comeback is building the future of American possibilities, building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down, investing in all America, in all Americans, to make every sure everyone has a fair shot, and we leave no one behind. The pandemic no longer controls our lives. The vaccines that saved us from COVID are now being used to beat cancer, turning setback into comeback. That's what America does. That's what America does.
Now, I wanted to give enough context in there so you wouldn't think I was just cherry-picking something and leaving something out. All the BS and lies leading up to that point, but it's now being used to beat cancer? Now being used to beat cancer? Did I miss a memo? I did some Googling. I found one story in USA Today from August 24th. In its bid to fight cancer, the Biden administration this week announced plans to enlist the mRNA technology made famous by COVID-19 vaccines. The idea is to create a platform of mRNA technologies that could turn the immune system against cancer and other diseases. That's not the virus. That's not the vaccines being used. It's the concept behind the vaccines being possibly used. It's wildly different. It's nowhere near that. You think, okay, you have cancer, go get the Pfizer shot. Now, is the way Joe Biden made it sound. That's not true. It's not remotely true. It's the only story, by the way. So it's not as though there have been leaps and bounds since August of last year. There's been nothing. Literally, I looked for it. In this case, messenger RNA-based technology would be used to turn on and off multiple genes within immune cells involving cancer, autoimmune disease, organ transplant rejection, and chronic conditions like long COVID. Okay, great. I hope it works. It is not working yet. And yet Joe Biden just blew his shoulder out and needs Tommy John surgery, patting himself on the back about it last night. And not one damn media organization on the planet, at least as of this point, has bothered to fact check him on that one. They just kind of let it all slide by. like it never even happened. All right, in reaction to the president's speech last night, the yelling and the whispering, and I'm for serious, and I hate all of you people, now unite behind me. The confusing, conflicting message that nobody seems to be connecting any dots to. Over at Morning Joe, boy howdy, they had some ideas about how good it was. It's kind of funny. If you watch, if you remember back in the Saddam Hussein days in Iraq, people would profess their love for Saddam. Had a bunch of purges. Progressives always love purges. You know, they want people close to them. They need people to do things. But when they get too close, they get too cocky. Whatever, they have them killed. There's always another lackey right there, ready to suck up to him. And they there's a famous footage of Saddam Hussein, it's all in Arabic, but of Saddam Hussein sitting up there accusing a bunch of people without even really naming names, or at least naming all of them, of being out to get him, working against him or whatever. And as people would get, people would stand up and applaud as somebody was dragged out. Like, oh, that person is obviously impure. And they were dragged out and executed. And all the other people in the parliament were standing up and clapping, like their hands would almost bleed. They're clapping so hard. Like, oh, yeah, no, get them. Absolutely. They're the worst. But I love you. I love you. And then their name would be called. And they're like, no, I love you. And they're clapping. No, please, I'm clapping. And they'd be dragged out, and everybody else would clap even harder. And Saddam Hussein was sitting up there in what my mother would have called she wouldn't have used this word, a poop-eating grin on his face as he watched people who probably were not disloyal to him being dragged out. I don't think you, in a big, government, you need to run a country, you need a lot of people involved in it. But you don't have to really get the impure people, you get some of them. All you have to do is put the fear of death in everybody, and everybody will be afraid to act. And then they'll go and report whoever it might have been who was speaking their impure thoughts. And you can identify them that way. And sure, you got to kill a couple of dozen innocent people, but if you're a totalitarian dictator who gassed your own people, you don't really care about that. It's not like, well, those 20,000 people I gassed, the Kurds, for no good reason. I could sleep like a baby, but that Mohammed that I killed by accident when I thought he was being disloyal and turns out he was disloyal, that one haunts me at night. No, you have no conscience at all. You're a sociopath. It doesn't matter. Everybody is disposable, and every human being is, every relationship is transactional. But boy, howdy, they suck up to him. They sucked up to, there was a guy recently in China who was close to Xi Jinping, who was accused of whatever it was, impure, whatever, being against the revolution. And he was professing his innocence and his love for Xi Jinping to Xi Jinping as the police or whatever, the authorities, the military, came in and escorted him out. Ultimately, the guy stood up and went out like, oh, shucks, I guess you're not going to save me, which is bizarre in and of itself. But the same thing happens in North Korea, where if you ever see Kim Jong-un get a round of applause from his lackeys, it goes on forever. Because everybody's afraid that whoever stops clapping first will be murdered. But they only think that because there's a fairly decent chance that whoever stops clapping first will be murdered. You clap like a trained seal until the dictator puts his hand up and says, okay, you can stop clapping now, but only after he does it a couple of times. You can stop clapping. I know you guys like, okay, you can stop. Okay, you can really stop clapping. And then you can kind of start to slow down. You make sure other people are slowing down too. And if everybody's starting to slow down, then, all right, you can kind of stop and put your hands in a bucket of ice before they start swelling to the point that your rings need to be cut off. That's the Morning Joe crowd. That's MSNBC's morning show over there. So I could have cut up a million different pieces of effeminate Harry Potter, which is what Joe Scarborough is. He wears these Harry Potter glasses. He's got Harry Potter hair. He's just missing the scar and the testosterone to actually be Harry Potter. He's like trans Harry Potter. He's Harriet Potter. But he sucks up to... Now, you got to remember, Politico or Axios, I think it was Politico, reported that Joe Scarborough talks to Joe Biden regularly on the phone. They're pals. Joe Scarborough loves the access to the president of the United States because the president watches Morning Joe obsessively. That would be like being Stalin's favorite television show. You kind of get a little sweaty and you make sure that you're always pleasing an audience of one. You do your whole show for an audience of one, which makes it profoundly terrible, by the way. When Fox and Friends was doing a show seemingly exclusively for Donald Trump, it was worse than usual. But every once in a while, they'd be rewarded with a phone call on the air, whereas Joe Scarborough gets to talk to Joe Biden off air and makes him feel super special. And so, they're assuming that Joe Biden was watching on Friday morning, which is highly unlikely because Joe was up late. He's normally in bed by 7. They screwed up his schedule. He probably had to take a bunch of downers to counteract the Adderall or the speed, or the cocaine or whatever it is. Maybe they had to give him some Narcan up the nose to get him to go to sleep that night. So he probably slept through Morning Joe. You might think, well, Derek, he could have DVR'd it. Do you really think Joe Biden knows how to DVR anything? Honestly. There's not going to be any proof of life video from Joe Biden on Friday unless it's him waddling out to Air Force or to Marine One to go back to Rehoboth. Because, boy, howdy, president put in a lot of hours this week learning a speech and then delivering that speech. He needs a vacation. He just earned it. And it worked a day in his life. But anyway, I want to play you this one clip because... Effeminate Harry Potter, trans Harry Potter, I don't know which one is better or which one will stick, but he went on to say that it's game, set, match to Joe Biden. It was a powerhouse speech. My God. It ranks right up there with anything Churchill said during the war. He doesn't say this, but it's right up there with Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. It is probably the greatest thing since Washington's farewell address. You have to, if you are not a fan of men slobbering over other men, you might want to plug your ears for a second.
Got to say, again, we just need to keep going back to it. Joe Biden underestimated time and time again. We were having the same conversation after the State of the Union last year. People going, oh, well, maybe he's not too old. Maybe not. Same now. It'll be the same going into this fall. I mean, Democrats, certainly, if there were any Democrats wavering, any Democrats concerned, last night certainly had to make them feel like they're in really good shape, especially, I just love how the issues line up. Republicans are on the wrong side of history. They're on the wrong side of the polls. They're on the wrong side of decency on so many of these questions. I'm saying specifically on that front, Donald Trump. I mean, last night, game, set, match to Joe Biden.
Game, set, match, Joe Biden. Yes. He caught the snitch. He totally won. God, how do you sit there and live with, how does an adult do that to themselves, right? I get when you're starting out and you go, you know what, I'm going to have to kiss a lot of ass and do a lot of whoring. I'm going to need a Silkwood shower when I get home to wash off the yuck of what I have to do to make it in this business. But at some point, when you're the guy, doesn't the dignity gene return? Doesn't it just, isn't there something about it where you just go, look? Now, Mika wasn't there, so maybe she keeps him in line. No, because he's actually worse when Mika's there. But you just sit there and you watch these people and you go, you're adults. You're well-paid adults. You're prostituting. Okay, you're call-girling yourself for this. You're escorts. You're escorting yourself for this guy because he calls you every once in a while to complain. We have a real bizarre media in this country that wants to suck up to, while they insist, by the way, we speak truth to power. Where's the truth to power, Joe? Well, the truth is that the people in power are the good people, and the people out of power are the bad people, and we have to keep the other people out of power. We must keep the other people out of power to save democracy. It justifies anything. If you believe your opponent is a Nazi, then anything you do is justifiable. If you believe your opponent is a totalitarian, then you're acting like a totalitarian is justifiable. It's okay. On the issues. MSNBC, by the way, Friday morning spent zero time talking about Lake and Riley or Lincoln Riley. They probably stopped all commercials from Lincoln Financial just so they didn't even possibly remind their audience of it. But man, he hit a home run. What with the way that the COVID vaccines are curing cancer? No mention of that. They are, it's embarrassing. You're embarrassed for these people. Anyway, just to put the other side on it. This person is bucking for a show on MSNBC. I think they're even too radical for CNN. But there's this leftist out there, this liberal who describes Trump's agenda. It's a TikTok, of course. TikTok, the government is thinking about banning TikTok because the Chinese government is influencing and perverting people's minds through their algorithm. Deliberately so. And maybe we'll talk about that another time. But this person put out a TikTok video describing Donald Trump's agenda, reading and then paraphrasing Donald Trump's agenda from Donald Trump's campaign website. And honestly, were this it's a woman, I think, but I'm pretty sure she's a trans guy. I can't keep track of these things. I don't know. I don't have my handy dandy slide rule for left wing crap handy. But she goes through. The campaign should consider hiring this person as an official campaign surrogate. I'm not talking about the Biden campaign. I'm talking about the Trump campaign, because as this person goes through, she's obviously going through to try and disgust her audience on TikTok. But realistically, I found myself listening to 9 points out of 10 at the time going, yeah, hell yeah, damn right. You go, girl. When that is clearly not what is needed. So I want to play this just because if this person ever finds out, it will annoy he, she, or it.
And here are the first 15 promises he has made if he is reelected. You may have heard of Project 2025, but this is from Agenda 47. And you can read all of these on his website. First, he promises that he will carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in history. He will also ask for the death sentence for anyone convicted of human trafficking. He will close the Department of Education and return all education standards to the states to decide. He will put prayer back into school, and he will criminalize any race-based advantage programs. He will end the Affordable Care Act. He will ban gender-affirming care for adults and children, and he will ban any federal dollars from going towards gender-affirming care, which means anyone with government-provided health care will no longer be able to access gender-affirming care except for Viagra and Cialis. Those will still be available. He will propose a constitutional amendment that gives a term limit to Congress. He will deploy the Department of Justice to investigate the Biden crime family and any of his adversaries or political rivals. He will immediately pardon all of the January 6thers, and he will create a task force to investigate anyone who arrested, charged, or imprisoned a January 6er. He will increase the penalties for underage criminal offenders, strengthen immunity for police officers, and deploy the National Guard to patrol woke cities. On day one, he will reassess our participation in NATO and says that every European country needs to pay the United States for protection. He will also restore the wonderful travel ban for Muslims coming to America. He will build freedom cities. This is 10 new cities built on federal land. He will award them to areas with the best development proposals, and he will prioritize moving young families to these freedom cities. He will kill all e-vehicles and e-vehicle legislation, seeking to replace that with the development of a flying car. He believes that we could create a car that vertically takes off. He will remove all of the limits on American natural gas exports and drill, baby, drill for oil domestically. He will impose a tariff of up to 60% on Chinese imports. He will extend the 2017 tax cuts and drop the corporate tax rate from 21% to 15%. He will push Congress to pass legislation that would give every American the right to concealed carry anywhere at any time. And he will revoke any gun restrictions or legislation that seeks to inhibit people's ability to own guns that's been passed in the last several years. He will demand that Europe pay back all the money we gave Ukraine, and then he will use all of that money to recruit for the American military. And he will take billions and billions of dollars from private university endowments by taxing, fining, and suing the universities. He specifically names Harvard in this one. And then he will use that money to create the American Academy. It is a free online college that will be free of wokeness that he will force employers to recognize as a bachelor's degree equivalent. So that's Agenda 47.
Honestly, yes. Compared to what we have now, I'll take most of that. And I'll live with the rest, you know? Just sit there. This person is obviously disgusted, but this guy will not allow leftists to mutilate the genitals of small children. How dare he? The hell you say? What? My God. What kind of... I don't want to live in a world where virtue-signaling parents can't adopt new genders for their children simply because they threw a Barbie in front of a boy and he picked it up and immediately became Becky. Honest to God, if you... I said this before about the trans thing, but I just want to illustrate this, and we have some audio coming up along these lines. But I don't know what it feels. I don't know what it feels like to be a woman. I don't know what it feels like to be another man. I don't have any freaking clue what chocolate tastes like to you. I know what chocolate tastes like to me, and since we're all the same species, I think that we all kind of can just know, well, we all know what chocolate tastes like. No, we all know what chocolate tastes like just to us. Some people love the taste of chocolate. Other people don't like the taste of chocolate. I'm kind of indifferent to the taste of chocolate. I like dark chocolate if I have to have any chocolate, but that's about it. And I'm not a big fan of ice cream, but other people live by ice cream. Could I describe to you the flavor of it? No. Could I describe to you the flavor of coffee? No, I couldn't. But I don't like the flavor of coffee. I hate it. But other people absolutely love it. So I don't know what it's like to be a coffee lover, let alone another gender or another man. You can't, without saying it tastes like chocolate, think of a way that you would describe to somebody what chocolate tastes like. You can't do it. It's insane. You can't do it. So now imagine you're 7 years old and a seven-year-old says, I'm a girl. What? And you take them seriously. The day before, they were an astronaut. And they put a bucket on their head and went around. And you didn't immediately then throw on an oxygen tank. Indulge in that delusion with the kid, because it's just a fantasy. It's just a thing. But for some reason you say that, and then it's reinforced by culture and society. Oh, yes, no, you are. You absolutely are these things. You somehow, you 12-year-old, you know the unknowable. And since you know the unknowable, we need to sterilize you as quickly as possible. We need to stop you from having puberty, and we need to start lopping off body parts, lest you suffer the indignity of being forced to live in the body you're in. God made a mistake when he was assembling you. Huh? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But that's what they want you to believe. And what do they say? Well, if you don't embrace that, you're either going to have a... you can either have a live son or a dead daughter, or a dead son or a live daughter, whatever it is. You're going to be a monster. You're going to drive your kid. Your kid's going to kill themselves. And parents get scared to death if they're not already on board and, like, cheering it and getting their lawn signs ready to virtue signal their neighbors that their kid is more trans than the other kids. But are you helping them? Until about 20 minutes ago, gender dysphoria was a recognized and treatable, rather successfully, mental disorder that now you're not allowed to talk about. So now you say, they say, well, there's a major suicide rate in the trans community. Well, maybe that's because they are having mental problems that you're not allowing anybody to address. You're indulging them. All right. You're indulging them. And that might make them feel good. Oh, everybody's validating me. Okay. But then the problems, the underlying problems that caused them to have this delusion in the first place are only getting worse. They're only getting fed. They're only being ignored. They're not being addressed. They're not being helped. And that leads to further delusions. That leads to, here are my gender, here are my pronouns. And they're not words that exist in the English language. And if you don't do that, oh, it's terrible. You're going to, if you don't acknowledge me, if you don't validate me, my first grade class, then I don't know what I'll do. And still, even though the entire left-wing industrial complex is designed to indulge these delusions, we're still told there's a higher suicide rate than ever before. Is it because somebody says, excuse me, ma'am, when it's a trans man? Or is it because something else is going on? If you're that much of a hair trigger and doing self-harm, maybe there are deeper rooted causes, but the left don't care about that. Solving a problem isn't helping, doesn't help the left. Defining a problem and defining the circumstances under which any problem can be addressed, that helps the left because it leads to control. But they care, and you don't. They are compassionate, and you are not. They are leading a pathway to misery and suicide in a lot of cases, but you're the heartless one for wanting to help people get past their delusions. Let that sink in for a second. Since we're talking about the trans issue, I want to play you a couple of things. There's a bill up in Minnesota that is about banning, or it's because Tennessee said you can't be waving flags for sexuality or anything in schools. Keep that crap out of schools. Only American flags. And the left is like, oh my God, I can't live without it. But there's not a rainbow flag and a BLM flag and a Palestinian flag hanging on there. How is everybody supposed to know I support terrorism? And like, well, they're not supposed to know. You're supposed to be teaching your kids. So this first grade teacher up in Minnesota was testifying about why it's so important for her to have a rainbow flag in her first grade class. You wonder why we homeschool our kids and why homeschooling is growing so fast. It's because these are the priorities. Joe Biden wants to spend a ton of money teaching kids how to read by the third grade because teachers are too busy making sure that their students know about their sex lives rather than their ability to do basic math and reading.
I use she, her pronouns, and I've been a first grade teacher for 16 years. I'm here in support of this bill to make rainbow flag bans prohibited. What does a rainbow flag mean to my students, my classroom? Here are some words from my first grade babies. It means my teacher will stand up for me. It looks like the flag's at my house, so I feel home. It means we all are here together. My students feel the importance of windows and mirrors. I want every child, family, and staff member to have a clear visual of inclusion and safety in the community I build. We know students, families, and staff members need to feel safe in order to learn, thrive, and continue to share their talents with us. My rainbow flag stands for welcoming spaces, trust, resilience, compassion, joy, collaboration, and community without judgment. And don't we all want that for all kids? I will always have agency to represent all communities in my classroom. It's important my students see their own and their family's identities in my space. Whether that includes our mural of Black excellence, our land acknowledgement written with some of our Native families, or my rainbow flag stating you are loved. My students, especially those whose stories are often left out, must feel represented and important, and it seems absurd that someone could take away that humanity from my students. So a piece of clarity from a former first grader, now 18, who still comes back to my safe space. Our rainbow flag means we'll always belong. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much for coming today and for your testimony.
This person needs to be fired immediately. First of all, probably doesn't have any kids. My first grade baby, they're not your babies, they're your students. If you're not teaching them, you're indoctrinating them. And if your sexuality or anybody's sexual orientation comes up in a first grade class, you're gross and there's something wrong with you. You should be fired immediately. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. This is how you sit there and you go, how did people get so screwed up? It's because this is the priority of teachers. I want to create a safe space. How about you create a learning space? Huh? How about that? You can see now why the President of the United States says we need to spend money on tutors, because the teachers aren't teaching. A normal person would go, well, why aren't the teachers teaching? But Joe knows why. The Democrats know why. They're busy making little Democrats. They're busy making people ready to be offended. An offended army will keep the people in line, because you're some sort of istrophobe if you don't adhere to, or if you offend somebody, you don't bow to the wishes of this community or that community. They don't understand the word community. And so you end up with this person. This is a delusional leftist giving a lesson on pronouns. What you're about to hear is not going to make any sense because you're a normal human being, but you need to know what the other side is doing so that when you encounter it in the wild, you're not taken aback by it and you can just walk away or laugh at them.
Neopronoun users to duet. Or if you're considering neopronouns for yourself, maybe even try a blind react. However, safety first. Before you do either of those things, make sure you're in a mental state where if you do get misgendered, you will be okay. All right, are you ready? Let's get started. Do you see this person next to me? E is my friend. C has had to put up with a lot to get to where Per is today. I just want to let Glint know that Thon is valid, that verb pronouns are valid, and that Sarah identity is valid. I wish Void all the best, and look forward to maybe even seeing some of their lovely content someday. Please, treat them with respect, and I'm sure A will respect you too.
No, I'm going to pass on that. I'm going to treat them like a normal human being until they prove themselves otherwise, and then once they start making pronoun demands on me, I'm going to not deal with them anymore. And as a word to every employer out there, never hire anybody it would be a lawsuit to fire. And these people are screaming it from the mountaintops that they are nothing but a mental health case in desperate need of help, who should be suing everybody who's ever educated them in the past for doing this to them. This is it. And don't you love that? Make sure you're in a good space where you can handle being misgendered. Hey, doesn't that sound a lot like somebody's acknowledging that there's a mental disorder going on here? A mental disorder we used to treat, and now we indulge? And guess what? Suicides are up, and all sorts of other things are going. But it's all because somebody said, sir, instead of ma'am. No, it's because you have mental problems. We'd like to help you with that. Once I would like to indulge you in that and make it worse. And that's the side that's called tolerant. And they're tolerating your suicide because it's useful to them. Gross, actually. All right, that is enough for today. That's well more than enough for today, and especially to start a week. I didn't get around to the Republican response. Maybe I'm hoping that it's forgotten. And she just reminded me of every theater chick I've ever known in my life, who it's like an audition, it's like faking, it's bipolar, swinging to outrage, to on the verge of tears. It's like, just stop it. Stop it. Why can't we get somebody to talk like a normal human being to do these responses, okay? It's not that hard. It's really awkward to talk to. It is if you think of it as performance rather than just having a conversation. Instead of a person or people there, it's a camera. Talk. There's nobody looking at me. I'm staring at a microphone, yet I'm able to make it seem as though you and I are sitting in the same room shooting the breeze. If I can do it, for the love of God, these people who have managed to suck hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars out of donors and win the votes of millions of people ought to be able to do it. But they can't. I don't get it. Anyway, have a good Monday, a great Monday, whatever. It's Monday. Monday sucked, but we'll be back because tomorrow's Tuesday, thankfully. So Monday's going to end. Have a great one. Thanks for listening.